It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning and welcome to Money Matters. It is Sunday morning, 7 past the hour, in the 10 o'clock hour, and you are headed to and from home and church and brunch and anything else happening on a... And I can tell you one thing, I know there's no golf happening because it's 20 degrees now here on Peachtree. When we got into the studio, it was around 14 degrees. Today, it is 20 degrees, and I know that there will be no golf today, and Ryan Neely does not like that at all. And if you're a golfer, I get that. We've got a long way to go to warm up, and it looks like, according to the Kirk Mellish, the WSB weather team, and weather brought to you, by the way, by Shoemate, it looks like we're going to get to around 36 degrees today. Sunny. Still very cold. Patches of ice out there. Be careful still on the roads, but it's certainly going to warm up a little bit today. The other thought here is that we have a call from Sharon that we held over from the 9 o'clock hour. There's a lot to unbundle with Sharon. We're coming back to you, Sharon. Hang on one more second. Very special treat, though, right after Money Matters here on WSB Radio. From 11 o'clock till 3 p.m., Clark Howard is doing a special for four straight hours. He's broadcasting live from CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, in Las Vegas, which is awesome because we're going to hear about all the vanguard of technology and what is happening with brand new products, brand new devices, brand new software, brand new stuff that it's the reality of the world that we live in. And it really changes how we do business and what we buy and how we build homes and how we protect ourselves security-wise and what we're doing on our smartphones that are so integral to our lives. And Clark's going to have every single brand new thing that's happening in the world for the next 4 hours. So as soon as Money Matters over to 11, Clark Howard special right here on WSB broadcasting live from CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So with that, let's go to the phones here. Again, in the studio here this morning on Money Matters, we're here to answer your calls and your questions, try to help you get ready and prepared in the right direction in the new year. We're going to get to our seven themes that I believe you got to understand for 2017 as an investor. These are the things that I'm really considering when it comes to where I invest money for the future in the next year. We're going to get to those seven themes. Of course, some of that has to do with Trump and interest rates and oil and what the economy looks like. But I'm also answering your calls and your questions about some of the specifics that you have with your family. And then maybe it's a question about a pension or a lump sum or a Roth account or a mortgage, or maybe you're on the verge of retiring, you're trying to figure out your taxes, and maybe it's just a real estate question. Hey, buy, sell, rent. Buy, sell, rent? Question mark? That sounds like a name for a television show, doesn't it? A real estate show. Buy, sell, rent. I love that. So the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Sharon, are you still on the line with us, Sharon?
Afraid so.
Afraid so. Well, thank you for being with us all this time. And a quick recap, you have a pension that is going to pay you for the rest of your life. And it's pretty significant pension. So $81,000 a year. And that's most of what you need to spend, right?
Yeah. It's really more than my living expenses.
More than enough. And then the other buckets of money, you've got TSP, Roth, and then just give me a quick recap of that again.
I have $82,000 in a thrift savings, $24,000 in a Roth, and I just inherited $80,000, and it might be closer to $100,000. I haven't gotten all of the income from that yet.
So Sharon, the question I have on that, that particular pot of money, is that just it'll be after tax money? That's not an inherited IRA or anything?
It's pure, it's distributions from bank accounts.
Okay, after tax money.
Right.
Well, I would tell you this, and then again, you also have a little bit of a mortgage left on one of your homes?
Yeah, I have $120,000 on my home that's worth about $3,000 something.
And the other, you have another property that's fully paid for?
Yeah, it's worth about $220.
What do you do with that? Do you rent that out for income?
No, I have family there, and they're currently not paying me anything, and I'm prepared financially to carry that if I need to.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like a blessing, too, for the family. That sounds wonderful that you're doing that, number one. Number two, you have this pension, and then TSP and Roth, those, what they have in common is that's after-tax money, or I'm sorry, that's pre-tax money. It's what we would call qualified money. TSP is just like a 401k. And,
right.
a Roth account is when it grows tax-deferred, it'll come out tax-free, but that again is valuable, very valuable because of its tax-free nature. And then you have this inheritance. Now, that you're not going to have any taxes on the inheritance.
Yes, correct.
There's no taxes there unless there was an annuity. It doesn't sound like that's the case. But that money for you is, I would look at that and I'd say, well, out of all the different buckets you have, TSP and the Roth account, and I think you said you also had some 401k money, right?
No, I had just cashed in roughly $50,000 of my late husband's 401 for remodeling.
Wait a minute. Well, how long ago did that happen? And so your husband just passed away.
No, well, he passed away 10 years ago.
Okay. All right.
And his 401 was in my, I converted it to my name. I rolled it to my name. So I've had this remodeling plan for decades. And so I took that out of, I cashed in his 401 when I retired, right before before the election, because I had no idea what that was going to do to the stocks. So I have that money. I have about $65,000 sitting in my savings and checking right now for remodeling, et cetera, and my emergency money.
So you cashed that. When did you do this? Was it still, this is probably the end of October you did that?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I was initially thinking there as we're talking, Sharon, is that it would be great for you to not have had to,
right.
You don't want to have cashed that 401k money out when you've got this already after tax money, because now you're going to have to pay taxes on the full $50,000.
Oh, I know, but my father passed away, bless his soul, and this is my portion of the inheritance.
Oh, okay. So none of this, so all of this is, of course, very unexpected. Okay.
Right.
So let's, as we move forward, and this is part of the conversation that we're having here, shows the impact of using retirement money to do things like a renovation or a new roof or a new HVAC system or a new driveway that you kind of, let's say in 10 years, you've got to do that in another property. You want to be able to not pull it out of TSP, because then the whole thing gets taxed. You're better off using that already taxed money, that after tax money. So I would be really careful with that and know that that is your emergency reserve. That is a valuable pot of money because of the tax nature of it and the tax status. You being a former IRS employee probably know better than anybody that if you can tap certain amounts of money and get it from an already after tax account, it's way better for you overall in any given year, because you don't have to increase your taxable income, your adjusted gross income, so you keep your tax bracket low. And you, because you've got this big pension every year, you're gonna pretty much always be in a pretty high tax bracket.
Right.
So Sharon, I would be really careful with that $80,000 to $100,000 inheritance. Now, it doesn't mean it can't be invested. You might wanna invest some of that money, but the other portion of it, let's say $50,000 of it or half of it, that's the kind of money that probably does need to stay in an app, in something that's just very liquid that you can get to. Maybe it's just a CD ladder. Maybe it's something in shorter term bonds so that you can, there's not a lot of fluctuation, and you can do all these different things at Vanguard. I mean, you can open up a Vanguard account and have that inheritance go there. And in the future, we can talk again, and I can maybe give you some direction on some of the funds that you might want to use when it comes to reinvesting that inherited money. So I think that's the bigger picture plan for you, Sharon. And a lot of this has to do with taxes. And then we can figure out what are the particular components of investing that new inheritance. So thank you for the call and happy new year. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. We'll continue to go to the phones here. We're going to get to our themes for 2017. First, we're going to go to James, who joins us from Powder Springs. James, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can I help?
Good morning. My wife passed away last month, and she had a IRA of about $150,000, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it.
Wow. So I'm sorry to hear about that. I'm sorry for your loss, James, number one. How old was she? How old are you?
I'm 65, will be 66 this summer, and she was 64.
And, okay, so she had an IRA that now you inherited.
Yes.
Because you're a spouse, you can leave that as an inherited IRA, or you can assume that is your own IRA. And because you guys were fairly similar age, 64 and you're 65, you're already past the age of 59 and a half where you can tap this IRA money when you need it and not have to get penalized in order to do that. You still have to pay taxes, but it will probably make sense. It'll probably just make sense to have that become your own IRA.
Uh-huh.
And then as you move forward, it's just part of the bigger picture plan that you'll generate income from and go from there. And I guess that's the question, whether you leave it as an inherited or just have that, you can assume it as your own IRA. Most of the time, I think it makes sense to just assume that is your own IRA. No reason to have multiple IRA accounts. Quite frankly, if you have 10 different IRAs, you're usually better consolidating them into one overall IRA so you know exactly how the whole thing's invested. You uncomplicate your life. And that, to me, is the best course of action from here moving forward.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that very much.
All right, James. Take care. Thank you for listening to Money Matters.
Great show, by the way.
Thank you. We appreciate it. The number in the studio, again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead right here, News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates four times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're back already. I love this. A lot of radio time here today. Let's go right to the phones. Gene joins us from Powder Springs. Gene, what's the weather like up there, man?
Well, it's sunny.
Sunny.
And it's pleasant. It's cold, but it's sunny.
Any ice patches?
Yes, there are. Where the trees have been over the roads, there are ice. There is ice. But other than that, most of it, 99%, is not ice.
Well, cool. Well, what's going on? How can I help, Gene?
Yeah, my question. Well, I'm at the end of the year. I'm with Vanguard Mutual Fund, and every November we get a notice that in December those mutual funds that are going to pay long term, short term dividends, and so my strategy in the past has been to move some of my earnings, some of my mutual fund. My money.
Your holdings, yeah.
My holdings, right. To those mutual funds that are going to pay out at the end of the December. But I've noticed that when they pay out the long term and short term, that seems to draw off when they give me money for that, and they seem to take away for the value that the stock goes down.
What they giveth, Gene, what they giveth, they taketh in equal proportion. So, let me explain what Gene's asking here to our other listeners, Gene. Because I don't think I've ever gotten this question before. At the end of every year, a mutual fund has to spread out all the tax realization that they've done to all investors. So in November or December, typically a mutual fund that's done some trading throughout the year will say, hey, we've got about 5% of our assets have to be We've got a real, we bought and sold stocks and we had a gain, let's say. Now the investors in our fund have to pay that out. So what do? They pay out a distribution. So in your mind, you're thinking, hey, wait a minute, we've got money coming in. I like that. So I'm going to go invest in these funds where I'm going to get this distribution. So let's say you've got, and I'm going to use round numbers. Let's say you have $100,000 in a fund and it pays out a 5% capital gain distribution. It's a pretty big number here, but let's go with the example. You'll get $5,000. So Gene's saying to himself, well, wait a minute, I'm just going to go into those funds that pay me out that $5,000. That sounds like easy money. The catch or the gap in what Gene is now, it sounds like you're starting to realize, is that whatever they pay out in cash flow, they immediately deduct from the net asset value of the fund. So if you get a distribution that's 5%, in my example, $100,000, $5,000 shows up in your account. Well, the value of your fund just dropped $5,002. So now your 100 is now worth 95, but you receive $5,000. The downside to that is that now, Gene, it's gone from an unrealized, untaxed environment to now you've got to pay taxes on the five thousand. Now, if it's in an IRA, it doesn't matter because it's all under the IRA umbrella. But if you were to do this in a non-IRA account, all you're doing is you're forcing yourself to pay higher taxes. So I know that you're thinking, wait a minute, I'm getting this to some extent, maybe it's free money. But of course, now that we have this conversation, I think you're starting to realize, hey, it's not free at all. In fact, you're technically penalizing yourself from a tax perspective to do so. You are electing to pay taxes that you would not otherwise have to pay if you were not in one of these funds that was not about to pay out a distribution. So let's have a New Year's resolution, Gene,
for
2017 to never, ever, ever in the history of your life in the world, ever again on the planet, ever do that again. And I think the first and the best step towards reconciling a mistake is to understand that you did it, and hey, don't do it again. And you're
right. But then the other question that I have is, do I move it to something, because some of them pay dividends. They also pay dividends, but then some pay more than others. So is it better to put it in those that I know are going to pay a dividend for that, you know, in December?
Well, you're preaching to the dividend choir here. So the answer here on this is a totally separate question. Has to do with, where am I really investing my money? And now you're asking about income investing, and you're kind of preaching to the choir here, because that's a big philosophical, that's part of my core philosophy as an investor. And that goes back to income investing. So let me take it just a second. I'm going to go through this, because here, this is important. The philosophy here on Money Matters for a lot of years has been one of income, meaning that I want to get income. And to your point, Gene, from everything I own, whether it's a mutual fund or a stock or an individual ETF. So income investing, again, it's not the only way to do it. It's not the only solution as an investor, but it can be a huge and predictable part of how we invest, or your overall total return equation. So remember, we're all trying to get total return. We want our money to grow one way or another. Total return, that formula is really simple. It's just growth plus income. Growth plus income equals my total return. Growth is powerful and it's important, but it's fickle and it's really unpredictable. Income, on the other hand, is very predictable in, of course, what we know to be a very unpredictable world. So it's one of the few things you can count on. And it comes in the form of dividends. They come from stocks and interest that you get from bonds or CDs, and distributions that come from a variety of other areas like pipeline companies or publicly traded real estate. All of those together, dividends and interest and distributions, they add up to a portfolio cash flow. And you'll have to, if you know what that, or the good thing about income investing is that you have a very good idea at the start of the year what your income will be. As an example, Lockheed Martin pays 2.8% dividend. General Electric, we go up the scale here, 3%. Procter & Gamble is almost 3.1%. Cisco's 3.4%, Pfizer's 3.8%, Verizon's 4.3%, Southern Company, their dividend yield is 4.5%. Now, up that yield ladder, those are seven stocks that I just mentioned. They're going to pay that cash flow as a percentage of today's market value, no matter what happens. That dividend, now granted, those companies have to stay in business to do so, but that is the predictable piece of the pie. We're going to talk more about this when Money Matters returns. straight ahead. News, weather, traffic, and more Money Matters right here. News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.
Seem to vanish like a gambler.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We got a lot to cover here in the remaining half hour of Money Matters. We're going to do our seven. I want to talk about the outlook for 2017. We've got to do that. The outlook, what the seven themes that I'm using to shape how we invest, our team at CIA in 2017. What we have to understand is the Trump impact, the interest rate impact, oil economy, all of that dovetails into stocks, bonds, commodities, all the things that we invest in. A quick preview for next week. So two quick programming notes. Number one, if you haven't heard Head West, which is the podcast I did, the show from the end of December, about getting those big trends, what do the next 5 to 10 years look like for each one of those main categories, stocks, bonds, commodities, then you can go to the radio tab at wesmoss.com. Go to wesmoss.com, the radio tab, and look at the December 18th show. Hour one talks about this concept. I call it Head West. It means that we're effectively trying to figure out the right general direction of these main markets, and that's an important podcast for any investor to listen to. Next week, we're going to talk about home prices. The statistics about where we live in America are so fascinating to me. If you look at, first of all, 32% of Americans in the millennial category, 18 to 34, they're living at home with mom and dad. Those are technically that's the millennial population. And that range encompasses, that's 75 million people in America. 75 million Americans, which means that 25 million of them are living home with mom and dad. They're living with parents. It is the number one living arrangement in America. 32% of that group, they're living at home with their parents. 32.1% to be exact. Married, cohabitating in a house, old school, hey, let's get married and live together. That's now only 31% of the population. So it's outstripped by millennials living at home with their parents. Living alone, or living as a single parent, 14%, and then other, which includes living with other family, roommates, grandparents, 22%. So right now, the number one living arrangement for that group is living at home with mom and dad, which is dramatically different to other decades. You go back to the 60s, there were only 20% of adults living with their parents, and 62% were married or cohabitating. This to say that demographics is our destiny, and it means a lot for the housing market and the price of where homes are going. And I want to talk about that, and we'll do that next week. First, let's talk about themes for 2017. So all that to get to, where do we go for 2017? And if you go back to 16, it was a very unexpected year. Let's call it the year of the unexpected. Anywhere from Brexit, which was a shock to the market that the UK left the European Union. That was a big, big turn of events that was a very unexpected turn of events. Just like the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series and the Cleveland Cavaliers winning. I mean, it was a year of the unexpected. And then, of course, Donald Trump winning the presidency, which defied all polls and all pundits and all experts suggested that that would never happen. And of course it did. And he'll be sworn in just a few days. And it's going to be a very new political environment from everything we're seeing. And the stock market was unexpected too. We had last January was the worst start to a year for the S&P 500 in any calendar year, which is a very scary way to start out the year. It was almost a 10% pullback in the very beginning of the year. And then we finished up on the year. The S&P 500 up about 10% on the year, 12% if you count dividends. So the question is, where are we going next this current year, 2017? Well, the first thought here has everything to do with Trump and Trumponomics. And we know that there's already there's a giant push right out of the gate to do something about healthcare. And where ACA goes is another very big unknown, and I'm going to try to figure that and unpackage that as we get a little more direction on what Congress is thinking. Right now, there's not a lot of direction on what it's going to look like. It's just that it's going to go away, or parts of it will go away. So we're going to continue to stay on top of that. But from an economic standpoint, think about the reduction in personal income taxes and the reduction in corporate income taxes. Taxes haven't dropped significantly since early in Reagan's era. When, remember back in 80, 81, the tax bracket fell from 70%. So it had a long way to go, 70% down to 28%. President-elect Trump is proposing to bring the top bracket down to 33%. So today it's close to 40, 39.6. Bring that all the way down to 33%. Fairly significant. Maybe not as, it's not as significant as what Reagan ultimately accomplished, but at least there is some talk about this happening. And the likelihood of it happening, even in 2017, it's a very high likelihood. And a massive corporate tax reduction from today's current 35% all the way down to 15. That's a big deal. The other thought about what Trump's doing in Trumponomics has to do with his hatred for regulation. Since 1976, federal regulation and government, there's been 180,000 new regulations, which have cost the economy almost a full 1% per year, if you go all the way back to 76, so 40 years ago, for the last 40 years. You do the math on 0.8% per year, almost 1% on a 10, 15, 17 now trillion dollar gross domestic GDP, gross domestic product. It's a very big number. So regulation, if that starts to go in the opposite direction, less, not more, that could also be stimulative for the economy as well. So lower taxes, lower regulation could add a significant boost to economic growth in 2017, which has been now stalled at 2% and slightly under 2% for really since the recession. So to have that new economic stimulus and impact it impacts everything. It impacts home prices, impacts the stock market, impacts wages, jobs, all of these areas. So as an investor, we're going to talk about that in a minute as well. Now, on the other side of that equation, though, number two in this list of seven, the downside of Trumponomics has to do with once things do get going. So interest rates, let's say the economy starts to really heat up in the beginning of the year, the first half, then you're going to see interest rates go up and maybe more than that are even anticipated today. You could see the U.S. dollar get even stronger, pushing, and it's already at a 14-year high or near a 14-year high. So if that all happens, higher interest rates, a really strong U.S. dollar, that could actually take some of the shine off the economy. Take a bite out of U.S. profits, could dampen what we export from the United States. So we export still a tremendous amount of our goods to the rest of the world. And they're high value, high dollar goods. Aircrafts, pharmaceuticals, automobiles. And it could make those products a lot more expensive for other countries to consume. So we've got to understand that, and not to mention if there happens to be some sort of levy or tax or tariff or whatever it may be on, let's say, Chinese goods. Doing the math on what would happen at your garden variety Walmart, if we put a 45% levy on Chinese goods, and I worked this, we did the math, Robert Sanders, our chief investment officer and researcher at Capital, we spent some time figuring out, hey, what would a big increase on Chinese goods mean just for Walmart? And the answer that we came up with is between 7% and 8% cost, a higher cost in goods. Now, who knows if Walmart will eat some of that or the supply chain will take up some of that. But in a vacuum, a 45% tariff or levy on Chinese goods could mean prices go up by a full 8% at Walmart, which is obviously a very big deal. And again, that slows down the economy when things get increasingly more expensive, especially if it's at a rapid pace. What does all this mean, though, number three, for the market, the stock market? Well, because I think the first half of the year could be good, but then you could get a little bit of cold water splash on the economy in the second half, I think it's a good environment for stocks, but not a great environment. So we go from what was a run at the end of last year. I mean, really, most of the returns we got in 2016 were the last 2 months post-election. So stocks went up and down, and then effectively sprinted the last 2 months of the year. That sprint has got to slow down. So I think we go from a run or a sprint to a jog, or maybe even a walk when it comes to the stock market. And that's something to really think about as an investor. I still think we have a good environment for stocks. The economy is good. Stocks still present a better value than real estate historically right now, than bonds have historically. So still, even though stock valuations are high, they're not cheap by any means, but relative to other asset classes like real estate and fixed income or bonds, stocks are still the quote best value out there for now. Then I go to oil. Next on the list has to do with OPEC, and I call this the OPEC put as in a floor. Prices are going to continue to fluctuate, but I think there's a floor now because of the OPEC deal that's around $50. So I think, but I also think that there's a little bit of a ceiling when it comes to all the new U.S. oil production that can continue to grow, and the Trump administration is very oil friendly, and we're looking at the revitalization of 2025 domestic oil infrastructure and pipeline projects. So the U.S. energy developments, that's going to add to the world oil supply, which will, again, we're not part of OPEC. So our increase in supply, which means more today than it ever has, because we're such a giant oil producer now in the United States, that'll put a ceiling on oil prices. So as supply increases, the price of oil obviously will have a little bit of a cap on it. So what that will do in totality is create this range, $50 to $65 in oil. What does this mean for different sectors? Well, from a sector standpoint, I would look for financials and industrials and technology. We call this get fit in the new year, fit standing for financials, industrials, and technology. Those are the sectors, at least, that typically benefit the most as the economy goes from kind of lukewarm to getting closer to red hot. Those are the sectors that you typically do the best, particularly financials. As interest rates continue to go up, those net interest margins, banks make more money when interest rates are higher. We also know that you're going to see increase in defense spending, 15% plus from Trump. So you could see defense companies do well. And even, again, I go back to having this more stable oil range. That's a good thing for earnings for energy companies relative to the last several years. So the next thought on this list here, which would be number 6 out of 7, is that interest rates have to hit some sort of ceiling as well. And we get this, again, the economy gains momentum in 2017, prospect of lower personal taxes and corporate taxes. That means the Fed's got to raise interest rates. Well, remember, we went from 1.4% on the 10-year treasury last summer to over 2.5% at the end of the year. Now, we've had some fluctuation at the very beginning of 17, but that was an 80% increase in rates. I don't see that happening again at that magnitude. I think we see maybe a 3% 10-year treasury, which would mean a 20-25% increase from where we are today, but not a almost doubling of where the 10-year was, or the 10-year interest, or 10-year treasury note. So I think we see higher rates, but with some sort of cap. Now, that's good news and bad news for bond investors, and we're going to talk about that straight ahead. So stay tuned. More Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. A special treat just ahead, right after Money Matters, starting 11 o'clock. All the way until 3, Clark Howard has a special right here on WSB Radio. He's broadcasting live from CES, that's the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where Clark is going to be doing what Clark does best, finding the coolest new gadgets, and I'm sure he'll talk about price of those new gadgets as well, that impact our lives. And CES is such an amazing environment to get it. to hear from the floor, having Clark there broadcasting live, is going to be fascinating. So that's from 11, right after Money Matters here, all the way until 3 today. Clark Howard special, broadcasting live from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So stay tuned throughout the day for that. Ryan Ely, before we get to our final theme of 2017, what do we have for WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack?
McDonald's weekend prize pack is a 4-pack of tickets to the Georgia RV and Camper Show January 20 through the 22nd at the Cobb Galleria Center, and a pair of tickets to see Jay Leno on February 18th at the Cobb Energy Center. This week's trivia question: this weekend officially kicks off the NFL playoffs, which I think we're all excited about. Can you tell me which team in the NFL has the most Super Bowl wins in history? Most Super Bowl titles.
You know, I know who it is not. It is not the Buffalo Bills.
It is not, although they do have the most consecutive Super Bowl appearances at 4.
And they lost all of them, didn't they?
That's right.
And I'm just recalling one of those ESPN 30 for 30s.
4 falls of Buffalo.
Depressing. I feel bad for them.
Gripping television, but yeah, it was tough.
So, okay, the prize line, 404-741-0750 for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. Ryan, thank you for that. Let's get into this final important outlook for 2017. And so the bad news here is that as interest rates go up, and we talked about rates continuing to rise from where they are today, but not dramatically from where we are. So we saw this historic jump in November and early December of right after the election. And last year, rates went up a bunch, which, again, really cooled off on bond prices. Remember, it's an inverse relationship. Prices go down as rates go up. So it's bad for bond prices. Well, number 7 here on our list of themes is that even though that's it's bad news, bond investors, from an income perspective, get a raise. So remember, we saw from 1980 until basically this summer, the 10-year Treasury yield went from 14% to 1.4%. And that was a great tailwind for bond prices and investors through that whole period of time. But now, as rates have started to go back up and are probably going to the trend for the next 10 years is for them to go sideways to up, higher interest rates mean more income for investors moving forward. So it's not going to be great for bond prices of bonds you already hold, but as we reinvest and bonds mature and we buy new bonds, then we're going to get higher interest rates on that. So that's a really important consideration when it comes to income investing. Remember, income investing is really just a philosophy. It's one of many ways to accomplish your investment goals. We're all trying to solve for total return. Growth plus income. That's how we get a total return. Growth is powerful, it's important, but it's pretty unpredictable. It's fickle and it comes in fits and starts. Income is very predictable. And that's why in a very unpredictable world, I like income investing. It's dividends from stocks and interest from bonds and distributions from all sorts of other areas. And that equals a cash flow. And if you will have a very good idea of what that cash flow will be when you start the year if you're an income investor. We talked about companies like Lockheed and General Electric and Cisco and Pfizer all having yields in the high 2s to almost 4% range. And that's a significant piece of the pie. We also know that, again, if I get Southern Company that pays $2.24 per year, divide that by my price, $49 today, it's a 4.56% yield. Bonds do the same thing. So corporate bonds today, as we start the year, the LQD, which is an ETF for corporate bonds, that right now is paying 3.35% in interest. High yield bonds are paying 5.3% in interest. So there's a lot of places to look when it comes to getting at least a baseline of a 3.5% or 4% income to start out the year. And of course, we expect prices to go up over time to take care of the remaining and very important part of that total return equation, and that has to do with growth. You can find me and the Money Matters team. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button, upper right-hand corner of those emails for your questions, and if you'd like to discuss your particular situation, they come straight to me and the team. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday. Stay tuned for Clark's special coming from Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And God bless and Happy New Year.